You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The Cyclone Fanatic Podcast is fueled by Cody Rhodes. And recorded in the Wild Rose Casino and Hotel Studio.
You're listening to the Let Him Cook podcast, fueled by Cody Rhode and the Wild Rose Casino Studios. Nigel, it is March. Happy March to you. I know in Iowa, it's Boise State basketball this week. Always a good time in Des Moines. Mm-hmm. However, you've been sending me some Illinois Boise State basketball, like qualifying and sub-state. I was not familiar with their game. I felt like Iowa has always done a good job with high school support and sports. I was a little bit taken aback by this, what's happening in Illinois. So what's the scene like over there?
I mean, I'm not there in person, but I'm my buddy Derek, he runs this account called Slow Shay, and he's kind of started this kind of like Illinois ball is life empire sort of ordeal where, you know, they kind of get out. He's kind of got like this whole network now throughout Illinois where they kind of get out to the best games in the state. And you're just seeing a lot of passionate suburban folk, like finally being able to support their community. Cause I feel like their teams have a chance. Cause like we've talked about off camera, you know, a lot of these Chicago teams, Curie, Simeon, Whitney Young, that have been powerhouses for years, been producing NBA talent for years. Not saying they're falling off, but they're just becoming more beatable just because I feel like more people are willing to stay, you know, in their district where they're from, playing with kids they grew up with. And we saw it a few years back in, you know, Glenbard West playing Sierra Canyon a few years ago at DePaul, and they only lost by a point, and it was a buzzer beater. So, I mean, those were five kids who grew up together. Four of them are now playing Division I basketball. And, you know, it's just – I think suburban communities are starting to, like I said, just gain more – excitement because they feel like, hey, winning a state championship is more realistic. And you're seeing it. I mean, people are packed. I mean, the lines are wrapped around the damn neighborhood, let alone the school. So, I mean, it's just Illinois. Shout out to Illinois. I feel like when it comes to high school basketball, it is a little bit underlooked because of all the pro teams, all the college teams there, obviously. But definitely, I've been very impressed to just see high quality games and just excited to see who can pull out the state championships this week. Obviously for Iowa too, because I know we haven't talked about it a lot, but I've been keeping tab on who's who in Iowa. And I'm definitely pulling for the Valley Tigers. I love me some Zay Robinson, Curtis Stinson Jr., you know, all those guys. They're some dudes. So I'm, like I said, Illinois, they're just one of one. And I think we're just starting to see more of those fan bases that haven't done it before, you know, finally get an opportunity. So I feel like you're just seeing a better, a different perspective from, you know, crowds and vibes and whatnot. So.
That's what I was going to say. And I remember you talking to me last spring, like the suburbs, as long as I've been around, like the suburb schools in Des Moines, your Waukees, your Valleys, Dowling, Southeast Polk, like those have always kind of run the show at the largest levels of Ankeny. So it was very interesting to me to hear that, like in Illinois, it's like, no, the inner city schools like Simeon, like have been running things. And now it sounds like it's starting to change a little bit to like closer to what it is in Iowa.
Well, and I think that was what was so weird for me when I was covering with you guys last year was just like, yo, I'm not used to, I assumed all the teams in Des Moines were probably going to be, you know, the guys. And to see all these schools like right outside the city be the dominant, you know, D1 talent-esque, you know, teams was just very fascinating to me. It was like a polar opposite. But I'm starting to see Illinois kind of transcend in that area too. Cause like we saw with, you know, Brock Harding and Owen Freeman, they dominated last year when they were seniors. So just seeing, I guess, how the times change and the players change with the times, I guess is really fascinating. I guess it's just showing that I'm getting old. Cause you know, I grew up on the Jabari Parker, D Rose, Simeon, Talen Horton Tucker, those days where you just couldn't hold their jock strap, let alone stay in a game with them. So to see kind of the parallel switch for me being a kid from a suburban school, to see kids like that who I know put just the same amount of time, effort, and passion into the sport, for them to finally get a chance to, you know, actually win a state championship is really exciting.
Nigel, speaking of good feeling redemption stories, we got a hell of a game to talk about, the Oklahoma game. Or as I like to call it, the Damarian Watson game, because Iowa State needed a hero, and waiting in the wings of the bench was Damarian Watson. Quick math, not a math major, I think the Iowa State starters went 7-for-38 from the field against Oklahoma. Not going to try to do the percentage off the top of my head, but it's bad. I don't know what that percentage is. It's bad. And here comes Damarian Watson, fourth guy off the bench, and just really is a spark that keeps Iowa State.
He came off the bench. He said, "TJ, hold my beer."
Yeah.
And then you got to take it.
What did you see from Watson? I mean, that guy had the game of his life, easily the best game of his Cyclone career against Oklahoma.
I mean, I think that's just a kid who was just like coming in there kind of with nothing to lose. I mean, Watson was kind of getting spotty minutes all year. So it feels like being put in a game like that is just kind of more of it's an opportunity more or less to just kind of play fearless basketball. And I feel like that's what he did. And I think, you know, for him to be so effective slashing to the ball, like that big three he hits is a game changer. Yeah. And like I told you, he's a corner three away from being like a consistent off the bench, maybe on some matchups, you know, starter at the 3-4 position if you want to go small. So I just feel like that's just a kid just taking, obviously not taking the I'm not playing, you know, role as like, oh, this season's kind of a, let's chalk it up. It's no big deal. I think he still saw a huge opportunity in a game like that where, you know, they needed a spark. And I think it's cool that to know that going into March and, you know, the most important part of the year, that we still have guys that even haven't even tapped into their, you know, potential yet, showed that they can impact this team and impact winning. So I feel like Damarian Watson, maybe it was the Gabe Kauser effect. I know he was in the crowd cheering him on. He was very proud of him too. I saw via social media. So just to see, you know, Damarian just be able to come in, show up and show out was special. And I'm excited to see what he can do for us in March.
Yeah. Watson goes 7-for-7, 1-for-1 from the 3-point. And like you said, that 3-point shot, I think came off of 2 straight 3-pointers by Oklahoma to not make it a close game, but Oklahoma was starting to make it interesting. And then Watson was able to answer with a 3 of his own and 9 boards, 1 rebound away from a double-double. And he had 9 boards with like 10 minutes left. And I was like, clear out, let the guy get a rebound so we can say he got a double-double. He didn't, but nonetheless, an incredible game. And like we said, like no better time to do it with how much the starters struggled against Oklahoma. Was there concern? We've kind of seen a trend in the last – maybe since we played Houston, where we've been winning games, but they haven't been pretty. Iowa State's offensive rating has gone down, I think, the last 3 or 4 games in a row. Is that a cause for concern, or are you of the mindset of a win is a win and it doesn't really matter how it looks?
For us, being that, you know, we're never going to be known for this like offensive juggernaut, you know, team. Like if we can get our offense going, sure. But like, that's a great day. But I think we always got to take it for what it is. TJ's been here long enough to where we kind of have an identity as a program of, you know, if you're a team that's in a rock fight with us, if you're the other team, I don't like their chances. I just feel like we're at this point, too many people have been in the TJ era, you know, players too now, to where like they kind of know how to respond in a game that, you know, they're not hitting shots, because it's happened a lot. So I just feel like being able to kind of be familiar with that type of game to where another team, it can be foreign to them. I think we always kind of have that upper hand. So we got to look at it as kind of just like a win is a win at this point. But also too, knowing what time of the season it is, usually I know last season we ended, I think at Baylor, and it was March 5th. And because we have, you know, 2 more teams we have to play this conference season, you know, it's kind of the regular season is kind of pushed off into this portion of the week, where usually last year, this would have been the Big 12 tournament. So I think just the season being a bit longer, people might just be a little dead legged, you know, and that's normal. So I feel like being able to fight through all that, but also being able to play essentially this type of game, hate it or love it, it's our brand of basketball. And I just feel like, you know, for lack of better words, we're kind of used to it at this point. So I feel like you kind of do have to take the perspective of a win is a win. So,
and Iowa State's defense was as good as it comes. I think it might have been the best defense we've played in a conference game against Oklahoma, the second half especially. If I would have guessed, I wouldn't have thought Oklahoma scored more in the second half than they did in the first half. Oklahoma looked tired. The defense was suffocating. The traps kept coming. Oklahoma just looked worn out by the end of that game. Kind of, I don't know if that's the effect of playing 35 minutes against Iowa State or if that's the effect of we're 28 games into the season. Oklahoma didn't have a single player in double-digit scoring. Not super surprising when you only score 45 points, but this is a dangerous Oklahoma offense. I think Porter Moser is a great offensive coach. He always kind of finds who's that? You sent me him. Who did he have at Loyola? That big guy?
Cameron Mother Bleepin' Crutwig. And don't you forget it.
Yeah. Man. Just like unorthodox guys that just excel at their role. I think he's always kind of had that. Oklahoma has a guy like that. He's on the bench, I think, with a foot injury. But I'm just always impressed with his coaching. And to limit their offense to 45 points, especially after they just put on, I mean, that game was in the 80s against Houston. Let me find the final score here. 87-85. And that game is in Norman, but I don't think that's a 40-point difference playing at home. Yeah. This is a dangerous offense, and Iowa State's defense really just nullified any threat that their explosive guards were going to have against Iowa State.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, when you're talking about Oklahoma, too, like I feel like just whenever we have an opportunity to get kind of revenge – and I feel like it was kind of the opposite with Houston because we played them at home first. But if we drop one of you on the road and you're coming back to our house, the next one, I don't like your chances. Like, I just feel like a part of Iowa State's way is just you're playing angry basketball. So no matter how many shots are falling, you know, whatever it may be, people are going to get after it on the defensive end. And I feel like Oklahoma really felt our pressure. And I just feel like going forward, I think that's a huge advantage for us, is if we do drop one on the road early, especially a first Big 12 matchup where we weren't playing the most compelling out of conference schedule this year. I just think after going through this gauntlet that what this season has been, I feel like you're just playing a more mature and better Iowa State team.
Yeah. Quick look at the team stats here. Iowa State forced 14 turnovers, had 8 turnovers. I would say close to dominated points in the paint. They had 30. Oklahoma had 18. Iowa State out-rebounded Oklahoma. And again, those are kind of the three things I've been looking at all year. If Iowa State out-rebounds, forces more turnovers, and has more points in the paint, that is almost a clear recipe for a win and success. And like coming after Houston, you know, you win that game, you're in the driver's seat to win the Big 12. I think these guys would have had a lot more to play for, speaking of Iowa State. And, you know, they're on the outside looking in from a conference race. They're basically just playing for the seed line in March Madness at this point, unless Houston slips up down the stretch. But I've just been so impressed with the will to win and how this team has finished games. And we'll talk about UCF in a minute. But, I mean, I think it is so hard, especially the way Iowa State plays basketball and how much effort and energy that demands from each player, to really focus in on some, you know, these aren't high marquee games. You're not playing Kansas anymore. You're not playing Baylor anymore. You're playing in Orlando, a home game against a bubble team like Oklahoma. I'm impressed by the commitment, and we haven't really seen a drop at the defensive side, which you would kind of expect at this point in the season. But from all looks, I mean, Iowa State is only a couple points away from being the best defense in the country after Houston's close call to Oklahoma. I just can't say enough about this defense. People said that, you know, it might take a step back this year now that Iowa State has more skill on the offensive side. We might not have to be as intense. This might be the best defense Otzelberger has had in three seasons here. I'm just I'm blown away on that side of the floor.
Yeah, and I think too, like, all it takes is getting a group that can contribute more offensively, because defense, it's a mentality at the end of the day. And with TJ, I feel like that's ingrained in people's heads come June, you know, when the team is together for the first time every year. So I feel like that's not going away. It's a matter of, can we get guys that can produce offensively as well? And the second you get both, you're looking at a Final Four contender each year. It doesn't matter what team it is. It doesn't have to be Iowa State. If you can have and embrace that culture, I just feel like, you know, you embrace the mentality of, obviously, you know, saying we're gonna guard the hell out of you for 40 straight minutes. The second you get any offensive production, you're just gonna see a better team regardless. So I feel like to have the mentality or kind of fear that the defense will ever fall off, especially under TJ, I feel like is really unrealistic at this point, because no matter how talented a team is offensively, we've always brought it defensively. It's just a matter of who can make shots after playing such, you know, just tiring defense, essentially, after such a long Big 12 season and obviously the gauntlet that it is. So
I think Chris Williams said this, that how highly Gabe Kalscher and Rob Jones spoke of Damarian Watson his freshman year. I think Damarian Watson had every opportunity to transfer, especially knowing that Momcilovic and Omaha were coming in, you know, right after him, and they were going to be fighting for playing time. Doesn't transfer, and now he has this huge, point in Iowa State season where he's clearly the MVP. I think Iowa State sent out, like, the who's the MVP of the game. He had, like, 99% of the Twitter votes. So he got a standing ovation. Just what a cool moment for a guy who – like, knows what his role is. I mean, going 7-for-7, taking shots that you're supposed to. He had 4 offensive rebounds. I just think up and down this roster, Iowa State hasn't had a conference player of the week all season, which I think is...
That's crazy.
That is crazy to me. I feel like at some point, Keyshawn or Lipsy should have been able to grab one. But I think it just speaks to how much of a team Iowa State really is. I mean, it's not about one guy. It's about, you know, each individual doing the best at what he's asked to do. And I think Damarian Watson just put on a clinic in that front, you know, getting your time off the bench and just making the most of it. Just this team bought in continues to impress me.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think too, it's really cool to see, if you're a recruit or you're thinking about coming to Iowa State, I think to see that, hey, I could be as good as Omaha in high school and maybe not see the floor this year, but if I just stay patient, you know, wait my turn and, you know, wait for my moment. Like, I feel like if you just stay focused, you know, good things will happen. And that's such a good life lesson too, to kind of just like take with you, you know, outside of basketball, is that even when things aren't necessarily looking from, you know, a first perspective, like all things aren't going my way, to just stay, just, you know, keep chopping wood and eventually you might have a house. And I think Damarian Watson, he's built a solid foundation here. And I think going forward, I mean, it's only up and you can only build from here for him. And I think, you know, the tournament is a great opportunity where a lot of teams will not have a lot of film on him.
Yeah.
But you got to kind of worry about him at a certain degree. And then what? Okay, we're going to overemphasize Watson. Oh, shit, we just left Keyshawn Gilbert open. Oh, there's Curtis Jones. Oh, Taman. Yes. So just to be this deep, man, it's scary coming into March. And that gave me a new sense of life, because I didn't want to get too reluctant on a 7 or 8 man rotation. And that's all we're pulling out there. So I think Pav, Watson, Jones, especially, he led the team in minutes on Saturday. Like, I just think the bench play has been so good, and it's going to be such a threat come this March, because I feel like that's what, you know, we could have a Spike Albert, you know, story on our hands. Who knows? I don't know if it'll be that drastic to, you know, you get to the national championship and he's playing huge, someone is playing huge minutes and making huge shots, all that good stuff, but kind of similar to that kind of storyline where someone just, their number's called and they rise to the occasion.
I think we've talked on this podcast before about how hard it is to prepare for Iowa State, and that, like, Houston might be one of the only teams that's even able to replicate it with the physicality they have and the way they play defense as well. Not only do you have to prepare for Iowa State's defense, but like you said, you have to do scouting on all 9 guys on this Iowa State team. It's not, you know, let's shut down Keyshawn Gilbert and we'll live with the rest. Because if you do that, we could have five other players score double digits, and then, you know,
Rob might go for 40.
Right. Like, it's true. Like, you have no idea whose game it's going to be any given night. So I don't think it's like the Brockington team where it's like, all right, shut down Isaiah Brockington and hope we can just limit points elsewhere and we'll live with it. Like, you can't do that with this team. I mean, there's just too many guys that can come out of nowhere and drop 15, 16 points on you. And that's usually the difference in a game. So I think this team is a
– I want to also, since you just mentioned him, shout out to Isaiah Brockington. Just got a 10-day with the Pelicans. Huge. Yeah. Proud of that guy. That's a great story.
That's a great story with Isaiah. This team is going to be a hard out. I don't know, especially with, like, the quick turnarounds in March. You play on a Thursday, and you have to have a scouting report ready by Saturday.
It's tasking.
Good luck, because there's a lot to this Iowa State team that opposing teams are going to have to prepare for. So let's go to UCF. We were kind of talking before the show here. I don't even know what much there is to say. I think this is going to be a tough game. I've been talking about it for weeks. It felt like a trap game. But this team continues to win trap games. And I think even when we've seen Iowa State at their best in the last decade, you know, whether it's with Hoiberg teams or even the early years with Prome, we look at those teams with such high, you know, we think George Niang never lost a bad game, or Monte Morris never had a bad stretch. This Iowa State team's ability to win losable games, I think that's just been huge down the stretch. This was certainly a losable game. UCF had their space game or space-themed game. We were saying that's a great environment. Like, I think UCF, especially recruiting rise, like, they're going to be a program on the rise, similar to what TCU has done, where they were nothing in basketball. Now Jamie Dixon really has a nice squad down there. So UCF, a team to look out for, but again, just an ugly game. But Iowa State find a ways to win. What were your big takeaways from this game at UCF?
I just feel like, you know, it, like you said, it was a trap game. And like we talked about a few episodes back, you know, the Cincinnati game being another one of those trap games. Yep. And really, the trap games being the two new opponents that we have to face on the road. I would say BYU, too, was another trap game. We unfortunately lost that one. Yep. But nonetheless, I feel like just being able to go into a hostile environment of UCF is that team that we saw come into the Big 12, and they were doing a lot of, you know, it was a lot of rah-rah, rah-rah. And, you know, Saturday was a great day to back it up. And, you know, they tried. They really did. But, I mean, they kept it. They had us in the first half. I'm not going to lie. I was nervous. But the last 5 minutes just really, really saved us. And, again, to be able to rely on that strong defensive foundation, I think, was the game changer, because like we've talked about, shots aren't always going to fall. That's fine. That happens to every team in college basketball. How are you going to respond? And I feel like that last 5 minutes is going to be the key going forward for the rest of the season. Like, every game, that last 5 minutes, that's where boys become men. And I feel like on Saturday, you know, in the quietest way, because we number 8 team in the country beat unranked UCF, big deal. But like, I feel like that was a huge, that was a huge just form of, like, within the locker room, I feel like there was probably an understanding of, like, all right, we can do this. Like, it doesn't matter how hard or how rocky the boat gets, we can sail the sea, you know, if we're all on the same page and being cohesive on the defensive end. And that last 5 minutes was beautiful basketball. So I like you said, I don't love it, but I don't hate it either. So, like I said, a win is a win.
And this is, that's a tough place to play. Texas Tech lost at UCF. Oklahoma lost at UCF. And then early in the year, Kansas, ranked third, went into Orlando and came out with a loss. So, I mean, that's, like you said, from the outside perspective of, you know, a top 10 team won on the road against UCF, it's not going to make SportsCenter, but that is a game you need to win if you're Iowa State. And that's what they went and did. And this always cracks me up. You're speaking about the rah-rah. I think the ultimate, like, all talk, no bite is slapping the floor on defense. Aiden, I believe we have a montage here. If you look at the score, it is
tomato.
It's 51-50. Iowa State is up one. And UCF had one of the, not only did they slap the fourth floor like a bunch of losers, it wasn't timed correctly. You had the three like perimeter players do it. And then you had the big man looking around being like, oh, what are we doing? And then he had like a delayed floor slap. And then if you look at what happened immediately after the floor slap and how Iowa State finished this game, just keep your head on a swivel, 60 to 50 before you know it. And this just goes to the Iowa State's ability to close out games. Like that was an ugly game. Iowa State didn't look comfortable for 35 minutes and then just were like, all right, it's time to win, and took care of business on the road, just a business trip.
This is like you're at the bar, all right? It's close to closing time, and you need to close, all right? Things aren't looking good. You know, the options are very frisk at this point. You're looking around, head on a swivel. You're in a pickle, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay. We've all been there. But then you see this one opportunity. And what at a bar may be a nice lady, right here was a floor slap. And you're like, all right, it's go time. That's all I needed. I'm ready. And by the end, by the time the lights come on in the bar, you're already walking her out. And that's what we did. We walked her out and we took her home.
ABC.
It's like you said, it's chess, not checkers. Iowa State, they're just pimping out teams. And I love it. I love it. It's gangster. To see that to a home team that could give them new life. Only down one, top 10 team in the country. Okay, like now we have the juice. But like you said, it wasn't executed perfectly. And I know Johnny Dawkins, former Duke Blue Devil, he's trying to bring that Coach K culture to his program. I get it. Just maybe we should run it in practice. A few more times, like 5, 6, 7, 8, and a slap. Right. It's got to be synchronized, like the swim team. But again, I just feel like that was very player of Iowa State. Just be like, put your head down, go to work, lock in, and let's get out of here. One with the bus.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
If you take a look at where that yellow dot is, this is from KenPom. I believe Austin Narber tweeted this out, and I love this. You can see almost immediately the oh shit, because the win probability finally goes into the UCF line, and then just sky, like the game is over after that point. It is a straight, the win probability went from 48% to 100% in about 2 minutes for Iowa State. So maybe don't slap the floor. To all those players out there, maybe think a little before we do that, especially against Iowa State. Like, you can't out... I don't even know. The other thing I love about Iowa State, they play like the bad boy Pistons without the bad boy. Like, they don't talk. They don't, they're not committing hard fouls. They're just putting you in hell. It is just not fun for the opposing team, for the opposing fans. Sometimes for Iowa State fans, it's not fun to watch, but it's a win. It's just winning basketball. I love it as someone who just admires great defense and ugly basketball to begin with. I get that it's not everyone's cup of tea. I don't think you can pull out the floor slap against a team like Iowa State.
Yeah, and I'm shocked because I know you. I've picked up on your vibe and what you like as a basketball fan. And it is kind of that college basketball team that can replicate, an inner city AAU team to the best ability. That's your vibe, and I can't hate it. I don't hate it. I just feel like you said, to be able to be a team where you can just kind of, all right, you want to have a rock fight. Okay, let's have a rock fight. Like, you're just so adaptable to, we're used to this kind of roughhousing. So if you want to play this game, we can do it. Right. You want to dance, we can tango. You want to polka, we can polka. Whatever you want to do, come and get it. So I just feel like, that last 5 minutes is going to be so important going through the rest of the season, because like I said, for the rest of your games, up until, say, you want to make the national championship, man, the last 5 minutes of all of those games is going to be the game. Like that is going to be the difference maker. And every game we've seen it, unless it's a Baylor Gonzaga blowout national championship, those last 5 minutes are crucial to who is going to pull out this win, especially in a do or die tournament, which I feel like at the end of the day, man, Iowa State, if all the seedings fall right and you don't run into a crazy 3-point team, which, you know, knock on wood, because that might happen, but I just really could see them, you know, because of how they're able to respond in late games defensively and what they've kind of done maybe out of Houston. Okay, how can we fix these things that we didn't do as well? Feel like going back to the drawing board, fixing those mistakes, they're going to be a very hard team to beat going forward. So yeah. I'm very excited for the future.
I think especially too, outside of the Big 12, just not many teams play teams like Iowa State or Houston on a regular basis. I think just the difference in physicality, and what sucks is this could come down to officiating. I mean, like, if you really want to as an official, you can probably find a place to blow a whistle on most Iowa State or Houston defensive possessions. The ball's in their court a little bit, but I think some of these dudes are just going to be like getting hit by a truck mid-game and being like, what, are we playing basketball, right? Like, I'm used to playing against, like, some I don't know, like, Atlantic Sun teams. I'm not used to getting trapped by Trey King and Curtis Jones, like, in the coffin corner. I just think it's going to be a tough out. And, I the ability to finish games, the depth, the defense, the, you know, team chemistry, the body language, everything looks good to me as an outside fan of this program right now.
Well, even to bring up to your topic about, you know, the officiating, I feel like you said, where a lot of teams and coaches have kind of been known to piss officiating officials off. I feel like TJ, because he's, right, you know, Mr.
Right.
I just feel like that's going to play in our favor too. Like, maybe the refs will just be like, yeah, we'll swallow this one. We'll swallow the whistle on that one. Yeah, he had his hands up. So it's all good. I saw all ball. We're good. So I just feel like, you know, we're a very, I don't want to say coachable, but we're very, like, when you're playing a game and, you know, you see the same officiating crew, you know, that you saw in Big 12 play, you see him at a tournament somewhere, I feel like, for whatever reason, if you guys had a good rapport in the regular season, it's gonna pay off in your end in the postseason. So I feel like I don't think that's gonna be a huge problem for us.
I certainly hope not. Like you said earlier, I think the one thing that still gives me pause about this Iowa State team, and I will say the last two games, I think UCF went like 1-for-19 from the 3-point line. Oklahoma shot it bad from the 3-point line. Going into BYU, senior night, Ames, Iowa, a chance to go undefeated at Hilton this year on the line. BYU can shoot that thing. I mean, that's what they do. They shoot three-pointers. My God. Like, Kansas, we talk about the Kansas-BYU game?
No,
was just dudes pulling up from 40. And those were some of the happiest moments I've ever seen running down a basketball court. They were killing those guys.
No, it reminds me, I saw this Instagram reel of this like 2K live stream, and it's a bunch of kids playing with an older guy, and they're playing blacktop, and one of them shoots a quarter three. He's like, that's right, stroke that thing. He's like, stroke that thing, nephew. And then everyone was like, hey, what? And they like kicked him out of the chat. And I feel like that's what's like, that is the epitome of playing BYU this year. They are the Mormon Warriors.
My God,
you know, just Caucasian snipers. They scare me. If I blinked, if you gave them a black jersey, put them in a black alternate jersey, I think you're playing a really like an all-time Iowa team. You know, yeah. They're a very scary team. But you know what? Like I said, you drop one early in their house. I know their house is, you got a lot of pent up Mormon aggression in there. You got, you know, a lot of just squares, really nothing to do but watch basketball, so they're equally just as crazy as Cyclone Nation, I feel like. But I just feel like when tables are turned, let's see how you are when the lamp gets hot in Hilton Coliseum, because it does get hot. All right, you can't even have a hoodie on in there sometimes. So you know, I just feel like, see, like there's a lot of good motivation this week to really just put them boys away early. And I think, again, essentially the game plan X's and O's wise is simple. You got to just run everybody off the line.
Yeah.
Like with extreme desperation. Like, and right. if they're killing you from the mid range, like pump fake mid range, cool. Two is better than three defensively. So I'll take that. But I just cannot have a team like that get hot on the road because bad things happen. And like we saw with Virginia Tech and BYU, I feel like those are two teams who shot the ball extremely well against us. Right. And it seemed to be our weakness. So now if we can kind of change that narrative too of like, let's change, hey, what used to be our weakness is no longer a weakness. My confidence going into postseason play, oh my God, who's going to touch us? Because if it's just Houston, I'm bringing a rock to that rock fight. I don't care. Let's go. Like, I'm rolling up my sleeves and I'm throwing a rock in my TV. I don't care. Let's go.
Wrap a bat up in barbed wire, bring a trash can, do whatever you need to do. If we see Iowa State and Houston, whether it's in the Big 12 tournament or, my God, if that's a Final Four game, Iowa State-Houston, watch out. Check everybody coming onto the court.
Blood everywhere.
It's going to get ugly. Going back to BYU, like you said, that is kind of the one matchup. I think senior night especially, look for a guy like Trey King, especially early in this UCF game, calling for the ball. Anytime he had a mismatch, he was like, give me that rock. And I think some of these guys kind of start to feel that internal clock ticking of like, okay, like I think Trey King, Rob Jones, Hassan Ward all have opportunities at the next level. I don't know if it'll be, you know, TNT on NBA. Like, I don't know if they're that, but they know that like this is some of their last, you know, packing arenas for people to watch me play basketball. I think they feel the weight of that moment, especially I think Trey King could really take over against BYU. Another thing I'm looking out for, are we still going to double down and be like, we're going to double you in the post, and if you kick out to an open three-point shooter, we're going to live with that? I don't think BYU has a super dominant post player. I don't know if we need to
double. I don't know, man. That Indian dude is insane.
Khalifa. But he's really good when he gets doubled. So if you don't double him and you don't have a wide-open guy for him to pass it to, let him try to back Rob Jones or Hassan Ward down to the block and see what he can do scoring-wise. Because he's almost a pass-first power forward, if that even is an archetype. So yeah, and I mean, I'm just wondering what they do there.
It makes sense to, if you have all those shooters, to have a big with that mentality of like, let me find my shooters first before I, you know, take myself as an option. But
right.
I just think he's so big and like awkwardly big to where like you could play him well to where you do take away all shooting options. So you take away his first option, but then he can kind of just like lull you into the basket with his just, you know, straight force. So I feel like that is the question mark. How do you contain Khalifa? But just going forward, I just think, man, at the end of the day, things just go out the window when it comes to, you know, to a certain degree, yes, you want to go in there with the game plan. But like you said, there's just so many other things on the line when it comes to legacy, when it comes to, you know, being undefeated at home, when it comes to our fans. You know, I don't know if midterms just happened or whatnot. I'm out of the college loop now. I feel like a grandpa. But, you know, I feel like it's a great time to where school is not completely in the way, to where, you know, people got to pop out. Like, Hilton has to be packed. And I feel like that can be a huge advantage. And again, I feel like things have been in our favor when we've gotten personal with the other teams. So if you need to crack a few Mormon jokes at the free throw line, do that. You got to call Khalifa a big booze belly. Do that. I don't care. Yeah. I mean, just get in their heads. You know, I feel like it's just gotta be, you know, a cohesive, everyone at Hilton Coliseum, managers, players, coaches, trainers, Jim Carrey, everyone has to be on the same page. All right. Yeah. And I just feel like if we do that, good things are going to happen. We know who their guys are. It's just a matter of executing. And then obviously the huge portion to us is we got to knock down shots too. So
right.
I think the biggest game changer in a game like that is Taman, is if he's able to kind of have one of those games where, I'm not saying you got to go out there and have 40, I mean, or 20 or 30, you know, just go out there and kind of impact the game from every aspect, you know, 12 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, one of those games. Like, it needs to be, and then obviously just like, we might need a Hall of Fame defensive effort from all three guards and Jones, Gilbert, and Taman. But obviously, just again, we need to play not the perfect game, but damn near close to perfect when you're playing a team like BYU.
Yeah, and I think it is a great look. You know, God forbid we come against a really good three-point shooting team in the tournament. This is probably our last look at a team like that. So, I like you said, I think it's a great get ready. And if you can get rid of that weakness, if BYU looks way worse from the three-point line and they're not getting all these open looks, again, I think it's like, where is the Achilles heel of Iowa State if that's not it anymore? So, and TCU, I just looked up, lost at Kansas State, lost at Oklahoma State, but won at Kansas. So I was going to say they're a bad road team, but winning at the Fog is no small feat. So I don't know. I think it just speaks to how up and down such three-point reliant teams are. I mean, you can live and die by that. As Iowa State fans through the Hoiberg era, we fully are aware of that. So, you know, like you said, run them off the line. I think maybe don't trap and double as much as we usually would. Play them straight up, man to man, and just see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and again, at Hilton, you see Khalifa trying to go one-on-one on the block. Take a charge. Sell it. Yep. Flop. I don't care. Scream. Yep. I would be. I'm like, my leg. Like, dude, get as animated as you need to. Because, I mean, if you get that guy in three, you get that guy, you know, three fouls, you know, 5 minutes left to play in the first, we're in good hands. Because I don't know who their second, you know, second big is. And I don't know how good of a passer he is or how he's going to be able to handle that kind of spotlight of, you know, Hassan, Rob, and Trey just being thrown at you. I think potentially getting Khalifa. And then obviously, think about this. I feel like at the end of the day, like offensively, we do have a speed advantage, obviously, on the perimeter.
Right.
So if you can, if say we go isolate Gilbert, you know, on one of the wings or maybe even top of the key or Taman even, and you get Khalifa just in that getting into his body, you know, early contact, foul trouble, that could be, you know, a good strategy as well. So I just feel like you got to kind of just pick at him and take your advantage to being at home and being the home team and using it to your best advantage, obviously.
I also think this is a game where Pavelecki can get quite a bit of run. He's not going to have to get as worried about beating off, you know, the first step on when he's playing defense. They don't have the super athletic quick guards that a lot of the Big 12 teams have. So I think we'll see a lot of Pavelecki in this game if he can have another, you know, big night off the bench. So there's some opportunities for Iowa State. Again, like we said, BYU is not your everyday Big 12 team. It's kind of a different look, so to speak. So I think it's a good test for Iowa State going into the Big 12 tournament. And Nigel, I want to ask you about this because between just what I've heard from our fearless leader, Chris Williams, talking to guys at KCCI, usually, you know, Iowa State fans take so much pride in the conference tournament, going down to Kansas City, you know, just covering the Power and Light District and Cardinal and Gold. However, I really don't think, you know, knock on wood, Iowa State wins out. I don't know how much we can improve or regress our seed line in Kansas City. I think if we win out, we're pretty locked in at a 2 seed. If we finish 2 games above Kansas and Baylor in the Big 12, I would be, even if either of those teams go on to win the Big 12 tournament, I would be not surprised but disappointed if either of those two teams hurdle us in the standings right now. I guess the gist of my point here, do you really think winning or playing, what, 3 back-to-back games, probably against top 25 teams, is that in Iowa State's best interest right now? I'm not asking that we just like throw away the first game and prepare for March Madness, but I think there are some advantages to having a couple days to rest, avoiding injuries. Guys are beaten and bruised up right now. Let's not, you know, take our chances going against, you know, back-to-back games of Oklahoma, Baylor, Houston. Has that crossed your mind at all? Or are you just like, no, full send, we're winning in Kansas City?
I mean, I like to live life on the dangerous end. So I want to see the team. I want to see this group win one championship. The national champion. I think because I've, you know, grew up being a Duke fan, I was always, the national championship was always on my mind, and it's always been an expectation, but I've also been very heartbroken. And when that doesn't come to fruition, no matter how good the team is, because I've seen a lot of good teams not win it. So I feel like the teams that do, those Duke teams that I rooted for in the past, you know, those teams that do win the conference tournament, I feel like it's like, that's one positive to look out, looking back at the season, because that six game tournament is so unpredictable that if you can win your conference tournament, it's like, all right, at least this group did do something. They, you know, they proved that they were a championship caliber team. It just wasn't their day, the day they lost, obviously. So I feel like, I feel like we haven't won a Big 12 tournament championship in a minute now either. So I feel like that's also not a thing to kind of just throw away. My mentality is strive for it, because nothing is guaranteed in March Madness. We've seen it year in and year out. A 15 seed can beat a 2 seed. Number one Purdue could lose, and they just might, you know, because a team like Nebraska is their kryptonite. So God forbid they meet a mid-major team that has the same, you know, kind of build and makeup. But like I said, just that tournament is way too unpredictable to put all your eggs in that basket. So I feel like the first game that Iowa State gets is a good test. If it's a rock fight, you may have to just throw the next game.
Right. Yeah.
You know, cause like you said, for, you know, taking care of the bodies, making sure everyone's fresh and just, you know, fully focused on the tournament, that might be your best strategy. But if you're steamrolling that first game, I'm sure, you know, Pav and Watson and maybe even Omaha are getting some minutes close to most of that second round. I mean, that second half. So I feel like if you steamroll your first game, I say go for it. But if you're in a rock fight first game, I don't know. Like you said, I might be leaning more towards your mentality of like, let's just not necessarily throw a game, but let's not try to, you know, this is now or never. You know, I just feel like I also don't want to be like, all right, well, we're focused on the championship, because I feel like that's also lame as hell, because Baylor's done that a few years and they'll lose to Carolina, you know, in the Sweet 16. So I just say you go out there every game, try to win, but, you know, go about it accordingly. And I think context matters game in and game out in Kansas City. So, you know, I know our fans will be there, but if it ain't your day, it ain't your day. You know, it is what it is.
I fully expect Odds to have, I mean, they'll be going 100% in that game. I know Odds, thankfully, doesn't think like I do and is looking ahead to March Madness and being like, oh, maybe take the foot off the gas a little. I know they'll be, you know, diving and running into the second row to save loose balls, but the narrative, at least, if we do lose right away, silver lining, just prepare this on Twitter, you know, chess, not checkers. We're getting a couple rest days in, getting ready for the big dance. But if we win it all, then the narrative is, you know, natty or bust. We just won the conference tournament of the best conference in America. So I think either way, Iowa State Twitter will at least have a way to make this a good narrative, whatever the outcome is in Kansas City. But I do think there is something to not putting your guys through a gauntlet of you know, top 20 KenPom defenses in back-to-back-to-back games. So
right. And I'm curious to see how well Houston handles this same situation.
Yeah.
Like, they're in a situation where they might feel like, yeah, we'll throw this away. Yes. It's really not that serious. But, you know, if they could keep their foot on the gas right now and try to win out, you know, regular season and conference, the conference tournament. And who knows, maybe by the time they get to the round of 32 or, you know, Sweet 16, they're a little gassed. And because we took our foot off the gas for a second, got some gas, got a drink at the gas station, and now we're cruising, you know, a team like us could outlast a team like that. So I'm curious to see Houston's approach too going forward, as if they're thinking the same way we are.
Right. And this isn't new. Kansas has always claimed to, anytime they don't win the Big 12 tournament, of, oh, you know, we're saving ourselves for March Madness. We
didn't really feel like it this year.
Right. So this isn't new. I'm not the first one to spin this narrative of, oh, we lost on purpose, but just something to think about. I think you're right. This conference is so tough that no matter who wins it, you're almost going to have to beat three top 30 teams in the country to do it. So a lot of fun in Kansas City. It's going to be, you know, great matchups up and down that bracket. So I'm looking forward to that. Nigel, before we get out of here, I'm bringing this from my days of podcasting on the Lightcast. I don't quite know the origin story, but there's a website called The Jerome, and you basically pick your conference tournament winner for each single conference through, you know, the American East, full of 16 seeds down to the Big 12.
Okay.
And I will send you the link before we get out of here, because it's a lot of fun. I love, love, love conference tournament week. I really think we're on the precipice of the three best weeks of the sports calendar, from the start of conference tournament weeks to the first week of March Madness. That is my holy grail of the sports year. And I'm so happy we're here. I've been listening to the CBS March Madness jingle nonstop for about 4 days now. So
I've been listening to Luther, One Shining Moment.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, man.
In my veins. In my veins right now.
The ball is tipped.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Nigel, anything before we get out of here? The top 25 is going to drop in about an hour. We're releasing before that. I would expect Iowa State to be right around the eighth best team. Maybe we go to seven. Anything before we get out of here?
Well, I'm a little mad that I had to do this yesterday, but because I'm obviously a proud ISU grad, I didn't want to have to read the VO of Caitlin Clark surpassing Pete Maravich, but because it's Louisiana news, we had to talk about it too. But right. Mary Margaret did me dirty. I wanted to do LSU women's basketball. She was like, "No, you're gonna do Caitlin Clark." She's like, "You're an Iowa boy." I'm like, "I am not an Iowa boy." Right. Watch your mouth. But yeah, no, I was a little mad about that. But again, I'm able to tip my cap off to Caitlin. Mm-hmm. I want to say congrats. Obviously, it's a huge milestone, not only for her, but also for women's sports. You know, over here, we still support women's hoops. Also want to give a shout out to Andrew Reese. She did the coldest shit possible on her senior night. Her, Haley Van Lith, get honored before the game. She walks out with her parents, obviously. But on her other shoulder is the one and only Shaquille O'Neal in an Andrew Reese t-shirt. I mean, talk about a power move. Like,
yeah,
the fact that if I could call Shaq Unk, life is good. Lord, you can take me now, because I've peaked. Like, that, man, dude, I'm so excited for the women's tournament. I think that's my last final thought, is just like, because I'm seeing a very good Iowa State women's team who's starting to get it, starting to click on all cylinders. I feel like they're starting to play their best basketball right now. And you're starting to see a more mature Audie Crooks finally feel comfortable in her own skin and being just a dominant force down low. I feel like they can make some noise this March, you know, they've already beaten Kansas State, which is one of the top teams in the country. So I just feel very confident about how they're going to do in the tournament. Obviously, Caitlin Clark is going to do numbers, just game in and game out. And then obviously LSU, I think, you know, they're going to have one of the harder roads to the SEC championship if they want to win the whole tournament. But I also don't see – I think the worst thing that could have happened for South Carolina is them ending the year undefeated. Because I feel like in today's age, that just makes such a target on your back. Not because of, you know, oh, it's March Madness, but because of betting. Betting, I feel like, has put the best and top overall seed and team at such a disadvantage. Because imagine, the easy thing to do for both tournaments is just predict the number one overall seed is going to win the tournament. You don't think Vegas is seeing that trend and seeing people put their 401ks on South Carolina to win the national championship? I don't think they're going to be okay with that outcome if, you know, half the country is doing that. And most of those people in South Carolina are doing that. So I think, with betting being such a huge part of sports culture now, I don't ever think the best team is going to win, because someone who doesn't know ball and is just going off straight numbers and is going off of, well, who's the best team? All right, let me put all my money on them. I don't think you're going about it correctly, and because Vegas is like, nah, we're changing the script. We're writing it right now. It's not going to be that. So Houston, South Carolina, watch it, because your time is limited. And you can bookmark this, because when both of you lose, I'm posting it.
Talking on women's basketball, I want to shout out Emily Ryan, coming back her fifth year.
The captain.
Yeah.
The general.
Think that raises the ceiling for next year's team by a lot. I think, like you said, we've just seen this Iowa State women's team continue to get better. And I think with basically an on-court coach who has been through the highs and the lows that Emily Ryan has as an Iowa State Cyclone, I think that truly is tremendous for the Iowa State team next year. To, like you said, they're playing great basketball and then basically not losing a whole lot next year with Emily Ryan coming back and this freshman core being as good as they have been.
Right.
Scary hours in Ames, Iowa, yeah. Because that team could be a wagon next year, and they can make some noise this year in March, I think.
For sure. And I'm so proud of Emily to be one of those key freshmen from that Donarski class where, you know, all of them kind of left and she kind of just stayed, still stayed on the boat and, you know, just believed in Coach Fenley. And she's just been such a workhorse. I was a manager when she was a freshman, and all hours of the night, man, all hours of the day, anytime they weren't practicing, I know it was COVID, so it was more reason to be in the gym, but she was just in there just working. Like by herself with a manager, like I was impressed. Like every time I was in there, you know, after hours, like boom, I'm seeing her there too. I'm like, man, like she's putting in the hours. So to see, you know, all that come to fruition and finally her getting, you know, one last ride in a fifth year, I think is going to be special for Iowa State, and I think it's going to be necessary. I also hope Johnston, the Lady Dragons, Lewis, what is it, Jenica
Lewis,
dude,
Hooper.
If Iowa State can get her, I don't, man, family, give her about 4 paychecks, all right? Please. Yeah. Just under the table. You know, no one's looking. Here you go. Please. I'll give you a car. Just come to Iowa State, Jenica Lewis, please. Oh, my God. If they can get her, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
It's a wrap like Mariah Carey. Oh, my God.
The number one recruit in 2026. So I think she... She's a sophomore right now, if my math is right.
Is she?
So that would put
her as a junior.
She's a sophomore. She might be
a junior. If she's 26, she is a sophomore.
Nonetheless, she'd be playing with senior Audie Crooks and senior Addie Brown. So that is something that no team in America wants to face. So something to think of, something to be excited about for the Iowa State women.
Yeah. Could have sworn I saw on Twitter like 2 weeks ago that Zay Robinson is making his commitment soon. So also Cyclone fans, tune the hell in. Cause if you guys can land Zay Robinson on the football team, like Curtis Stinson Jr.'s chances of also coming to Iowa State as well.
Yeah. And Zay would probably be a football player. I think that's where he's headed. So
although you've heard my theory about Zay, I think he could be our very own Julius Peppers. I think he is so good at both sports. I think he could legitimately play football and basketball. If TJ wants to toss an offer, I wouldn't hate it, because I feel like Zay is the perfect like makeup of a role player, like a seventh, eighth man. So obviously your first priority can be football when you're a bench player on TJ's team, but you're going to get in the game and you're going to make an impact. Could you imagine him and Taman Lipsey 90 feet of that? Oh my God. Take my lunch, bro. I'm sorry. I got nothing for this. I mean, and then also, I think that would just be such a cool moment for the 515 kids. You know, there's so many local kids now on that team that if you're able to close on a few Valley kids, oh my God. Oh my God. Iowa State, man, it's scary hours. If the recruiting can go our way, it's going to be scary hours for sure.
I also think Matt Campbell coaching some basketball with how we play basketball. I think football drills might be the way to go in the summer with how we've been playing basketball. I think Zay Robinson would feel like there might be less contact playing Iowa State basketball than there is Iowa State football. So he'd be like, man, football's tough, but this is a war out here.
Conrad Holly, he can play some D.
Yeah. All right, Nigel. We went a little longer than I would have thought. It never shocks me with how much time we can fill talking hoops. Anything before we get out of here?
Just nothing, man. Just I'm excited, man. It's March. Get ready. Mm. It's going to be a fun week. I got boys basketball this week too, so I got to get through that. And then our NAIA team just made the national tournament. They won conference yesterday. So I don't know if I'll be traveling with them, covering them as well. So I could have a very eventful March, but time will only tell. So I'm excited for all that.
We sleep in May. I'm headed to St. Louis for Arch Madness for Drake and you and I coverage.
I need all the Larry Nerd content I can get, please, Dylan. I need you making Twitter videos left and right. All the B-roll needs to be Larry Nerd, please.
I can't tell you how excited I am to be able to film a Robbie Avila game because that guy.
Illinois product. An Illinois suburb product. I'm telling you, man, these suburban kids, they got it too. They got it too. I'm telling you.
He's going to be the first overall pick in every YMCA league he is in for the rest of his life. That man's going to be cooking dudes until he's 65 years old.
In Bulgaria. I'm not going to lie. He might have a Hall of Fame career in Bulgaria.
Yeah, that guy's going to be different over there. All right, we're getting out of here. Go Clones. Let him cook.
Let's go.